there's the bowling pub that me, Mickey and him drank when we was kids, 15, 16. Bobby Moore's had a shop over there.
Yeah, Bobby Moore's shop over the road.
And this is the entrance to our stadium, which we'll have a look at now, shall we? But look, they've still got the bits of the gates there that were our old gates. And you've got the memorial here. This is where people have been left, you know.
November, it was overgrown.
Do you know what? Because I've been here a couple of times now, sad, angry, annoyed with myself because we've done nothing to stop us from moving. We sold a dream. Do you know what? I think our own greed is the death of our own club because we were sold a dream and what was wrong with what we had? Top 10 would have been all right. A couple of cut runs.
We fought it once with the Browns, didn't we? When they went with the bond scheme. We put up a battle before, but we didn't put up a battle.
You never know, there's only one block of flats left.
Yeah.
Where's the other three going?
Yeah, I know.
And the bus station, we couldn't build because of the bus station, ain't there no more.
And welcome to the Sound of Football podcast. I'm Graham Sibley, and as usual, I'm joined by Jan Bilton.
Hello.
And Terry DeFellum.
Hello.
The returning Jan Bilton.
Yes.
Good to have you back.
Well, thank you. It's nice to be back.
Yeah. Did you listen to last week? Because we had Ed last week, and it was great. Not that it was
no,
great.
For that reason, I didn't listen. No. If I'm not here, it just didn't happen. It's like when Sunderland used to lose in the Premier League, which is all the time. I just didn't bother watching Match of the Day.
Same sort of thing. Yeah.
Didn't watch it. Didn't see it for about 10 years.
Didn't see it. Didn't happen. Well, it has been another interesting week in football. Actually, it's been interesting, not really about football, really, isn't it, Terry?
No, it's been off the field, or on the field, off the field, shenanigans going on.
Yeah.
Particularly at West Ham, I suppose.
Yeah, off the field, things happening actually on the field.
Yes.
Yeah.
Off the field matters spilling onto the field,
mm.
as opposed to the other way around, which is what we're, what we're used to.
Yeah, supporters being horizontal mountaineers and planting their flags in the middle of the pitch.
Graham Souness style.
That meant to be a nod to Graham Souness? It didn't work very well.
Actually, no, because this protest actually predates that, because West Ham fan did it in 92 when they were protesting against the bond.
Oh, yeah.
Back then when there was ugliness in West Ham. And yes, someone did that there. He planted the corner flag in the middle of the penalty spot. Yeah.
But did it look a little more dramatic than Saturday's did?
Yes, yeah. Lots of people have had their say about what's happened at West Ham. And
now it's our turn.
Well, we're going to talk about it in respect to fan protest. What fans can actually do and what they can't do. And also how it seems that fan action is being either undermined or being let down by fans themselves. And whether or not there is any sympathy within the media or football in general. Well, let's just start with the actual events on Saturday. Yeah, when did you first start hearing about what was going down at West Ham?
Well, I went to see Sunderland lose to QPR, so I was on my way back.
Right.
Home when I started hearing about what had happened that afternoon. And, you know, as is the case these days, there's lots of video of what's happened, not just the official stuff that's floating around, but people have actually captured it themselves on their mobile phones. Some of the social media video footage I saw was of the ordinary fans just going, what is that going to achieve?
Yeah.
And as they went past, some of them, you know, give them a bit of a clip. And I do mean just a clip, you know, a bit like a policeman used to give a naughty schoolboy kind of thing. But then as they got further up, it got very, very nasty. And I think that's when some of the inter-fan rivalry was starting to come out. And actually, it got really quite horrible then. And it was, you know, I was kind of watching that going to my son, oh, look at that. Look, they're getting told off and they shouldn't do that. And then I was like, oh, you can't see that, because that is, you know, was starting to get very, very violent at that point, which was a real shame. Because I haven't got a problem with fan protests. To be honest with you, and you know, I might upset a few people, I don't really have a problem with people entering the playing area either.
Yeah.
Because I think there's a difference between going on waving a corner flag around or going there and trying to attack a player. Those things I don't agree with.
Yeah.
But you know, if a whole bunch of people had gone on with some kind of banner that actually meant something and actually made a statement that was constructive and, all right, yes, held up the proceedings, but didn't endanger the players, which is what I felt happened on Saturday, then I think it would have been a very different game that would have been reported, or a different kind of protest that would have been reported on.
And Terry, what did you think? What was your immediate reaction to it?
Well, I didn't find out about it until sometime later on Saturday evening. I found out about protests in the build-up Chelsea Palace game, but then I watched that game.
Mm.
So I didn't find out really about it until Sunday morning, by which point the focus seemed to have shifted to more about concerns about security or lack of security at the stadium, and very little discussion or coverage of what the West Ham fans were actually protesting about. I think we've talked about on this podcast, and people have spoken before about, you know, the situation at West Ham, not just in terms of the problems that they've got on the pitch, you know, the results, the poor results, but also the fact that they're in this stadium and that there seems to be, shall we say, mixed views about how successful the move's been. And then obviously questions about the owners as well and the management, about, you know, whether or not they're acting in the club's best interest. And I'm assuming that this is really where this, well, if you want to call it a protest, but this unrest stems from.
Mm.
But by the time I sort of like joined in, you know, people were talking about, you know, oh, there weren't that many stewards there and it wasn't very well organised and, you know, this was a concern. And I can understand why people would be deeply concerned about matters of safety. But I was a little bit sort of like surprised that there wasn't a little bit more dialogue about, you know, why are these people so angry and why are they choosing now to demonstrate their anger? So that's still a little bit lost on me, I have to say.
Mm. There was a proposed march, wasn't there?
There was due to be a march on the Saturday, and there was meant to be 10,000 people. Well, that's what they were estimating anyway, before the match. Because when I first saw it, I thought, well, this is the West Ham fans losing their rag because they're being torn apart by Burnley. And then looking further into it, you sort of think, actually, no, this is all rather unseemly and a little bit ugly behind the scenes here. We've spoken about the problems at West Ham. We've spoken about them for years. But the ones that most recently about the moving to a new ground and the whole thing about this feeling of gentrification of the club, whereby the owners, Sullivan, Gold and Brady, are changing the identity of a club. There is also intrigue in the manner of the cancellation of the march, because it was cancelled by one fan group, which isn't the one that's recognised by the FSF, but it is one of the most vocal ones, and also seems to be the one that's got the ear of David Sullivan.
I forget the initials of them, but it's a
fan Real club West Ham Fans Association, I think.
Thank you.
But they've also been linked to some far-right naughtiness as well.
Well,
and
they,
old casual stuff as well. Well.
They're the old ICF members, Intercity firm.
Yeah.
Hooligans, frankly, from in there. I mean, I read about meetings last week in the newspapers about meetings between this body and the club in regard to this protest. And then the other organisation, yeah, which is the one that, as you say, Graham, is aligned to the FSF.
Yeah, which is the Independent Supporters Association.
Yeah, that's right. And the chairman or the head of that, or the delegate of that particular organisation, states that he's received threats or abuse online from other West Ham fans and is staying away from the football club.
Yeah.
Because he's concerned about his safety. And he's also said that he's very unhappy with the reaction from the owners and from the club, who have done very little nothing, frankly, to condemn this abuse that this guy's got.
Mm.
So it's all quite strange, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
From the surface, it looks like the club are taking sides with what appears to be a supporter organisation that has links with the far right.
Mm.
I'm not quite certain what that's all about. I'm sure there's more to it than that.
I'm sure that they would deny that, and they would blame it on certain individuals on social media that don't actually represent them.
And that may well be the case, in fairness.
However, leading figures within the group are also leading figures in the Football Lads Alliance, which comes under the banner of anti-terrorism.
Yes.
Which will mean that they're racist, basically.
Yeah, anti-Muslim. Yeah,
yes.
Okay.
Basically. And the leader of the Independent Sports Association is a former Labour Party member and also expresses support for Sadiq Khan, which doesn't go down very well with people who are anti-terrorism.
Indeed.
Yeah, so there's
for some reason
horrible intrigue going on there as
Yeah, so the level of the targeted abuse of the leader of the Independent Supporters Association was really couched in the language of him being left-wing and West Ham fans not wanting Antifa organisations speaking for West Ham supporters.
Yes, that's about the size of it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which adds a worrying dimension to it, doesn't it, Terry?
Yeah. I don't know to what extent this is something that West Ham have had all their time, but you know, the idea of something like this becoming this political is very worrying. But I'm afraid it is also reflective of our of the times in which we live as well.
Yeah, certainly.
Opinions are polarising and there's very little interest in centre ground or moderate thinking or politics. And, I'm not going to argue with anyone about that. But we're certainly seeing an expression of the ugly side of our politics here in the UK and indeed further afield, but specifically in the UK. Ultimately, politics of identity, but also politics of property and gentrification and things like that, which are all bound up into it. It's just created this really quite toxic situation at West Ham. And, you know, in the meantime, they've still got football matches to play. And goodness knows what will happen if the club is relegated. Yeah. Under those circumstances, I mean, it's only going to make things worse. But it's very difficult to really know a way out of that situation. But if you've got the chairman of the Independent Supporters Association for West Ham not comfortable going to the stadium anymore, effectively no longer a West Ham fan, then it seems that these kind of guys have won the argument for the time being. I don't know. I don't know quite sure whether or not that's really the image that the club owners wanted to reflect. If they're looking for potential investors and new owners, which I suspect that a lot of this is because I think that the ownership were thinking that what would happen is they'd move to this new stadium, have a bit of a rebrand, and then they would sell the club to maybe to overseas investors for large sums of money, which would be great for the club because they'd get a big injection of cash, and it'd be good for them because they would get more money. So, and I mean, at the moment, none of those things appear to be happening, and in fact, situation seems to be escalating to a point where it is becoming extremely worrying, you know, from a political point of view and from a community point of view. The West Ham represents a diverse community from people with all kinds of ethnic backgrounds living there. This is not the kind of place where you want to be having these kind of arguments.
No. Do you think that, just to try and take a different position on it, that maybe faced with the prospect of having, let's say, the right-wing element of your fan base marching through Stratford before a football match would be a powder keg, and maybe the club, I don't know, were brave and said, look, you know, let's have a conversation with you rather than have something as ugly as that happen. Talk to people who you generally probably wouldn't want to entertain just to stop something really ugly from happening. Maybe what we saw on Saturday was the lesser of two evils, and maybe it could have been, you know, really, really horrible if you'd had some kind of if it got that political.
I agree, but I would expect on the other side the club to be so very supportive of the other of other fan groups, more left-wing fan groups, particularly if they're being abused. Now, okay, I accept that perhaps these are individuals and maybe they don't they're not in positions of power. But there is an opportunity and I think also an obligation for the club, if they are going to engage with fan groups, to engage and support all fan groups. And it does seem to me like the club is not behaving in an even-handed manner. And that I find worrisome.
There is an element of mistrust on both sides, isn't there, of the fan debate? Because you've got what is going to be the more progressive side, the side that we've seen develop over the last 20, 30 years at all clubs, across all football, rising up through fanzine culture. The sort of people who read When Saturday Comes, you know, the sort of people who like to think about football intelligently, love going along with the game and are more progressively thinking. And then there's the old-fashioned type football fan who we've been trying to say, oh, no, that's not football. But we all know it is because so many of those people do actually go every week. And they have a voice now.
And they pays their money.
They pays their money.
Yeah.
Also, as well, it's never been easier to mobilise people now. Mm. Never, ever this easy to get traction going. And this is what the ICF, what they want to call themselves now, have. They've also, thanks to years of the fetishization of hooliganism, have built up a popular following online. So they can get a lot of clicks and a lot of response to protests that they want to organise. Whether or not that's coming from good-meaning people or whether that's just coming from people who just like a bit of a ruck,
yeah,
we don't know.
No.
But when you're having secret meetings with the chairman, well, Karen Brady is having meetings with all the other fan groups, and then all of a sudden unilaterally decide to stop a march, and then Newham Council think, well, actually, it's going to be too dangerous anyway. We can't guarantee people's safety, which I think was the right idea.
Mm-hmm.
You have all these things building up, and yet again, the stewarding at the ground was appalling on Saturday. And I know we don't normally see visible policing now with inside grounds.
No, this is true. No.
But really, you would have thought that on this occasion...
Mm. Well, yeah, I mean, I think it's important to not move into the realms of armchair stadium management.
Yeah.
But nevertheless, on a day such as this, where a march had been planned and had been called off, it would have been reasonable. And I'm sure that given the dialogue, that it would have been reasonable to assume that there would have been some attempt at some kind of protest of one way or another in the stadium, that there might have been some value in maybe laying on some more security or getting the police further involved. And it doesn't appear that that's what's happened, although, in fairness, that's yet to come out in the wash yet, so we'll see. But, I mean, on the surface, I think John Motson was saying that with one particular crowd quite close to where he was, there were just two young men wearing high-vis jackets, you know, holding these guys back, or, well, not holding these guys back. And he was saying that, you know, had it, and it's worth pointing this out, had that crowd chosen to get seriously nasty, then there could have been real danger. You know, like, as it was, there was objects thrown, and then there was the violence that you just talked about, Jan, as well. So I'm not saying it wasn't trouble-free, but I do think it's probably worth pointing out that while there was a great deal of anger in the stadium, it's likely that it could have been significantly worse.
Yeah.
There could have been a riot in there, but there wasn't. So, which suggests that even though there were angry people there, there were cooler heads that prevailed within that stadium, which I think is also, I think, worth pointing out, because I mean, the easiest thing that you can do is to just condemn West Ham fans en masse, when in fact, you know, we are talking about some West Ham fans, not all.
A single figure percentage of the crowd that were there.
Yeah, which is enough.
Yeah.
I mean, we know, and we know this from life, don't we? I mean, we know this on social media. We know that the majority of people who make up the nutcases on social media are actually only a tiny minority of people who actually exist in the universe. So, you know, but they are the loudest ones.
Yeah.
And they are the ones who cause the biggest problem. But and it's the same in I'm sure in this situation as well. But it is deeply distressing to see problems being beset. And I think it's also worth saying that if the ownership had made different choices, then not that these people wouldn't be still there, but I think that the oxygen wouldn't be there for them to use as a platform for whatever causes that they might have. You know, I do feel that West Ham board of... They've certainly not brought any of this onto themselves, in that no one deserves to have anything thrown at them, no one deserves to be abused, but they have, you know, they've created a situation and they now need to work to de-escalate things and try and give some kind of assurances that you know, the club is in safe hands and it has some kind of future.
Yeah, I think for me, I mean, given what I know about it, which isn't much, I don't go to these meetings, but it looks like, look, Brady, Gold and Sullivan are trying to manage the situation rather than actually doing anything about it. Because I don't think they think they're doing anything wrong. I think they're going in exactly the direction they want to take the club. And everything is going great. They are the 17th richest club in the world.
Yes.
Yeah. You know, that's a fact. They make, after the top six and Leicester, because they got Champions League money, they are the next highest earning club in the Premier League. So
they're ripe for a takeover, really.
Everything there is exactly. If Karen Brady throws down the balance sheet on the table, she can say, we are a success. I can prove this with business. Look,
I mean, as long as the club stays in the Premier League, I guess.
Well, yeah, that's the thing, isn't it? Because one of the many sources of discontent amongst the fans is that, you know, there's all this money sloshing around and they're not seeing any kind of success on the pitch.
No.
You know, the stadium thing's another thing, but it's, you know, the main thing I was hearing the other day is this, you know, sold a dream, delivered a nightmare. You know, they're sitting there with, you know, David Moyes as their manager, and, you know, which is never going to end well, folks. And you know, they're scratching around to stay in the Premier League. You know, that status of being, what did you say, the 17th richest club, is, you know, that's going to plummet.
Well, we said this,
if they go down, of course.
We said this in the past, and it's worth repeating. You could, and with the stadium sale, and with the increased revenue that's coming in, you should be able to see West Ham's money from the moon. And I mean, they're not spending it on players. You can understand why disgruntled West Ham fans will feel this is actually, we talk about old school football fans, this is old school football club ownership. You know, this is the bad old days of club boards making money hand over fist and very, very little of it actually going back into the club. They are no doubt wondering where all this money is has gone, because it doesn't appear to be being spent on players. Now, that Cam Brady and David Goldentubler may well have answers to this, but you know, when you are, you know, where they are in the table, and you've just been beaten at home by Burnley 3-0, Burnley scoring three goals, folks. These are not good situations. So yes, you're right, Graham, about the balance sheet, but the fact of the matter is also that they had a perfectly serviceable stadium which they've now sold to property developers. And they've moved into a new stadium which is not in their area, and they don't own it. I've got it on lease on favourable terms. I appreciate that, but I mean, that is not an asset that they have. And as a supporter of a club that got into financial problems precisely because it sold its ground, and it took years and many, many millions of pounds to reunite the club with its ground, you know, this, these are, in the long term, this is a recipe for administration. And I don't think the club, I genuinely know that West Ham are far away from that. If they are relegated from the Premier League, you can all suddenly spiral. And for me, this is a club that looks like it's setting itself up for a purchase. They want a big foreign investor to come in and pay them lots and lots of money to take the club up on, and then it goes forward. And the idea is that everybody then wins. But that hasn't happened. Obviously, after things like Saturday, it's less likely to happen. Foreign investors would look at that and say,
why would I do
that? I don't think I want to invest my brand in that right now. So then you, so the ownership, they do need to reassess their target if they want to achieve their ultimate goal, assuming that I'm correct about what their ultimate goal is.
What's worrying is that there's a there's two things to consider here. One is that I saw a lot of Birmingham City fans voicing their discontent this weekend after the West Ham incident, because apparently there was a scheme that they were involved in when they were in charge of Birmingham to sell St Andrews and to move into a ground around, I think, the NEC area, which was going to be partly funded by the public purse. That sounds very, very familiar, doesn't it? And that didn't fall through. That didn't work, and it fell through, and they sold the club to
Carson Young.
A guy from Hong Kong who was later locked up for money laundering.
He went to Turkey, didn't he?
So, you know, they tried that there. It didn't work out, and then they ditched it when the and I'm probably oversimplifying this, but they ditched it when the fans got very unhappy with the way things were being run. They ultimately got relegated, sold the club. And then moved on to West Ham, and it seems have just got the playbook out and gone, well, this is how we make our money. And you know, there may
that
not be any, there may not be any malice there. That might just be their business plan. And you know, like you said, they may well think that, you know, this is the way that you run a modern football club.
Well, no,
but we saw
West
what
Ham
happened
fans.
Last time.
They're West Ham fans, and so I'm sure they feel they're acting in the best intentions. But I mean, you have to look at Birmingham City to see what happened there. And that's what that is what they're doing, and they pulled it off, and now they're waiting for, and now presumably phase two is to sell the club off so that they can retire with significantly up on the deal. I should imagine. They all stand to make a great deal of money. It is not surprising that given that backdrop, that many West Ham fans are extremely angry with them. Extremely angry with them. And you know what football's like. It's difficult to maintain. It's difficult to be emotionally mature with football. And when it's something that you care about that much, But now it seems to have escalated to somewhat larger and broader and more worldly proportions. And it's genuinely toxic and horrible.
One of the biggest problems for fans is finding a way to protest, finding an effective way to actually hurt the club without hurting the club. We've seen it a lot recently. We've seen it a hell of a lot this season. And as I said earlier, it's partly down to the fact because it's so easy to mobilise a coordinated protest. But it's still not very easy to actually find an effective protest that doesn't backfire on you as a football fan and wanting to see your club do well. You were at QPR on Saturday, weren't you, Jan? And so you saw your club playing. And obviously there's a lot of people who just aren't turning up anymore, even though they've paid for their tickets.
Well, I mean, away, that's the opposite is true. You know, we saw the allocation, but at home, you're absolutely right. So, you know, there's been official attendances recorded of 28,000-30,000 people.
Yeah.
And you know, it's clearly not that many in the ground. You can see all the pink seats.
Yeah, and the same is happening at Arsenal as well last week. Yeah.
Is that protest boycotts or is that just sort of like this is rubbish? And I think can't bother to go. Yeah.
And I think, you know, that's one form of protest. And there's, you know, Sunderland fans have signed a petition. I mentioned this the other week. But what they're not doing, and you know, it's difficult for me to say anything about this because I'm not doing anything either, but I am 350 miles away and I can't really do much apart from whinge about it on a podcast. But Sunderland fans aren't doing enough about it, I don't think. You know, there's no one's actually got a little bit angry about it, and you know, and I don't want people to get angry and start endangering the lives of players and children and things like that who are going to the game. But I think the worry is we don't want to be a bit like the Mags. You know, when the Mags did this last time, you know, they went on the pitch with their bedsheet saying sack the board. You know, the board resigned and sold out to John Hall, and John Hall ushered in the 1990s for Newcastle, and they had one of the most successful times ever. There was a buyer ready to go who had a lot of money, and he was locally interested, so it's a little bit different.
I was about to say that,
but you know, they got angry about it. I was actually watching before it came out a clip from Panorama in 1990 where they were actually in interviewing fan groups. And the outgoing chairman at the time, and John Hall, and there was a real movement at the time to actually have some change. And yeah, they got a bit naughty, and yes, they won on the pitch a few times, not to the extent that we saw before. It was an actual protest rather than, you know, some of the things we saw on Saturday. And it did deliver change. And I just think that, you know, if you actually want some change, then you do have to sometimes. You know, push the envelope a little bit and make a bit of noise, but there's a fine line between being aggressive and endangering people and scaring children, and actually making a point that might get somebody to change their mind and decide to maybe move on and sell up. But you know, what do I know?
Well, is it time for us to buy some tennis balls then?
It might be time to buy some tennis balls. Yes, the tennis balls are a symbol of anti-gentrification. In a lot of countries, and they're very, very effective, because you get enough of them, you chuck them onto the pitch at a predetermined moment. They're not dangerous, you know. Even if they hit someone, they're not going to hurt you very hard. But they're brightly coloured, and they make a big difference. And of course, they're tremendously inconvenient.
You know, bounce around,
and they bounce around a lot, and then you get stewards having to go out there and clean them all up. And it's a very visual way of demonstrating your displeasure, and it's a genuine embuggerance to the club. And indeed, if it's a televised game, which they work really well on, it's a real embuggerance to the television companies, because it means you've got a lot of TV people standing around spending all this money on this. It costs thousands of pounds a minute to transmit and broadcast a TV game. So you hold it up by 5 minutes, you're costing the broadcasters a stack of money. You're applying real financial pressure on the big stakeholders in football, and you're inconveniencing them. This was the last time this was done at Eintracht Frankfurt. I think we mentioned this a couple of weeks ago, it was because of the Monday games. They've started doing televised games on Monday in the Bundesliga, and fan groups in Germany are opposed to this. The first game was at Eintracht Frankfurt against Leipzig, and the Frankfurt fans left their allocation and went out to the side of the pitch and held a protest on the side of the pitch. They didn't actually enter the pitch.
Right.
And then for the second half, they then lost the tennis balls on. And it's very clear that the club were fully aware that this was happening. And this, of course, is the big difference between, say, in Germany, where they have their supporter liaison officers have power and influence and actually talk to people of importance, and they don't tend to hear. Because, you know, when those balls had landed, you know,
out came this army of presumably club volunteers with those little tubes where you collect tennis balls and were just scooping them up. I mean, then they were working, and then there was another wave, and and then they had to do that. And it all looked fun, but again, I stress, I mean, all of this stuff is cost. Meanwhile, the broadcaster, who has insisted on this game being televised, is costing them a stack of money just sitting there while watching people pick up tennis balls. So, I mean, I'm not suggesting that would necessarily work in England. For one, there's no way that the security would allow that to happen, because they wouldn't allow the tennis balls in, because we'd come up with some kind of bullshit security thing.
Yeah.
Now, this is a country where you can't drink within sight of the pitch. Yeah. You're not going to be allowed to bring a tennis ball, because someone from the Daily Mail will probably hire somebody to go in there and stick a razor blade in one of them.
Yeah.
Yes. They are perfectly capable of doing that, because they hate the working class so much. That they will, they're happy to accuse them of doing such an unspeakable thing, and so they would just never, it would just never happen. But I think that this is probably the area that fan groups, if they're looking to protest, need to start thinking about, and maybe they do need to start talking to the clubs and saying, look, we're going to do this. But it's different with West Ham. This is a protest against the club. The protests I'm talking about are protests against the Football Association, yeah, or against the broadcasters. And so clubs can get on board with that.
Mm.
You know, say, OK, fine, you want to have a protest, it's fine. We live in a democracy. You can have a protest. As long as you don't fight or anything, or do anything seriously stupid that will endanger people, go ahead and do it. And we'll, fine, and we'll have guys ready with... with, you know, whatever those things are called to pick, we'll be ready to pick up your tennis balls, lads.
Yeah. Yeah.
You go for your life.
Yeah, with those you know, ball suckers.
With our ball, we've got plenty of.
Actually, no, I don't think that's probably a good.
But it's really interesting, actually. Funny you should say about ball suckers. You could cut this out if you want to. This is the most animated I'm going to be on this podcast.
Don't cut this out.
I remember Eintracht Frankfurt, they had a cup game. It was a quarter final or a semi final against Borussia Dortmund. It was on the telly. And for what, I don't know what it was, obviously, but at the popular end of the Eintracht Stadium, they had a load of different flags, all highlighting local businesses from what I could see. And they were, and one of them was anal sex tours.
Oh, yes, I remember that.
And it was right by the corner flag. So every time Henrik Mkhitaryan went to take a corner, the BT viewers were treated to this wonderful banner saying anal sex tours.
Yes, we have tours for anal sex. Yes.
This is all perfectly mature in Germany. Only in England do you find this funny.
what is so funny?
I fail to see the amusement of anal sex tours.
How else are you meant to know where the anal sex is?
This is a banner that says anal sex tours. It is therefore the purveyors of anal sex and their tours. Your English baffle me.
Yes,
we're
yeah.
Childish, aren't we?
Yeah, we are. Yeah. Maybe if we weren't, then you know, maybe we'd know how to protest a bit more.
Maybe we would.
I'm sure that Messrs. Gold and Sullivan sell something that could be thrown onto the pitch. That would be that damaging to people.
Well, the factory,
throwing Benoit balls onto the pitch.
Factory's only round the corner from here, mate. We could go along afterwards if you fancy it.
Go and fish around their bins and see. I don't fancy doing that at all.
No, we're not doing that. No.
Luckily for West Ham, they don't have any games now for another 3 weeks because they're not playing because of the FA Cup this weekend, and then there's the international break. So they have plenty of time to sort something out.
Yeah.
But then again, also, fan groups have plenty of time to sit and stew, which may cause even more problems.
Mm.
We'll have to keep an eye
on that. We'll see. Is this really just a question of them getting something off their chest and that they'll calm down and let things be for a while? Or is this the beginning of something more? We don't know the answer to these questions.
We don't indeed. But hey, we know the answer to this question. Who's doing the weekend box set this weekend?
I'm doing the weekend box set this weekend.
Yeah, of course you are. Yes. Anything interesting?
Well, it's quarter-final weekend.
Oh, of course it is. Of course. So I just mentioned it, didn't I?
Swansea versus Tottenham Hotspur. And, yeah, Manchester United versus Brighton. Because I'll be watching that. I'll be watching Manchester United versus Brighton.
That's late on in the evening, isn't it?
It is. It's a 7:45
kick-off. Yeah, which is very convenient if you're coming up all the way from Brighton, isn't it?
Yes, it is. It's, Wigan, Southampton and Leicester and Chelsea. I'm going to go out on a limb here and say that these are not the most inspire. I don't know. It's me and my kind of I'm just a bit.
You're just going to put Leipzig Bayern in there, aren't
I you? Might be a bit contrary and put Leipzig Bayern. I'm half tempted to put the Betis game over the Man U Brighton game, but I'm not. I'm going to go full FA Cup. So there'll be full previews, but I may well actually talk about something completely different.
Well, why not?
Particularly with the Man U Brighton game, because come on.
Well, if you want to read what Terry says about the quarterfinals, or whatever he wants to talk about instead of the quarterfinals, then get along to tinyletter.com/soundoffootball, and you can read it for yourself. 7 games every weekend, isn't it? And it's free. Free inside your email. Sign up today.
Free in your box.
I think we've already taken this conversation in directions where we really didn't plan.
No, I have only begun. As soon as you press that stop button, Chief.
Yes, that's what I'm worrying about.
That's always cute.
This is a very, very small room after all. But from now, from me, Graham Sibley, from Jan Bilton and from Terry DeFellin, it's goodbye.
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 You can contact us through our website, sofpodcast.com, via Twitter, @soundoffootball, or on facebook.com/soundoffootball.
Audacity, it's 5.5.5. The meat skins and the chunky mode.